Now, on a completely different note entirely, the trend for adaptations of novels in Hollywood and indeed on the small screen has been on the rise recently with massive hits like The Handmaid's Tale, The Hunger Games movies, Game of Thrones, of course, driving people back to read the books. And now it seems it might be the turn of Catch-22 by Joseph Heller. I'm joined in the studio by author and journalist Etna Shortall and Harvey O'Brien, who's a lecturer in film studies in UCD. So, guys, it started on Thursday night in Channel 4. This is kind of a George Clooney passion project, Catch-22, regarded as being a bit unfilmable and stuff like that, and quite experimental book in form and everything. The first episode was quite straight, but wasn't bad. What did you think, Harvey?
Yeah, I don't know what it wants to be just yet, because it was very straight, because the novel does have this fearsome reputation as this epoch-defining, radical, you know, reconceptualization of the novel.
Unreadable, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And here's this TV show, which is kind of, yeah, it's fairly straightforward, you know, so far. And now, I read a piece in The Guardian during the week about it, and they were saying, well, that's what's good about it, that actually they've taken what could have been unfilmable and made it entirely approachable, because it feels very familiar. It feels like a kind of Clooney-esque film.
Yeah, and he's doing that kind of semi-cross-eyed kind of comedic Clooney
The Men Who Stared at Goats, and he did Leathernecks. You know, he does have a feel for that period. Monuments Men, even Hail Caesar. I know he didn't make that, but he was in it. It has a very similar vibe to those things.
He's goofing around, really, isn't he? Yeah. Etna, what did you think of it?
I love the book, and in my 20s, I used to, you know, name it as one of the top three, but now it's been so long since I've read it that I feel like I can't say that anymore unless I'm going to go back and read it again. But what I thought they captured really well is that where everything's a contradiction, the actual sense of what a catch-22 is, that, you know, you can't, what a catch-22 is that in order for a pilot in the war to be grounded, he has to declare himself insane. But if you're sane enough to declare yourself insane to get out of war, then you're not insane, you're sane. You know, so like that everything. And that is, that they do that really well, which there was a film made in the 70s, and that maybe it's just too short an amount of time to get all that wordplay in, and I think a longer TV series is a better way of doing that. But what I didn't think it got as well is that, as well as the book has so far anyway, is that actually the situation is so depressing, you know, like they go for the comedy rather than the depression element. But maybe as the series goes on, it's going to get a little darker, I don't know.
Yeah, so you see already now we're divided on not as good as the book, not representative of the book. So, Harvey, when you're a big reader, when you hear of an adaptation of a book you like, do you think, oh no, they're going to wreck the book, or, you know, what's the transfer process like?
It depends. The first thing I think is, well, you know, have they done this before? And has the previous version got a reputation of being the definitive version? If so, why has this been done right now? Has it been done for commercial reasons? Has it been done because the person who's adapting it has a passion for it and an interest in it? That would interest me more, because I don't expect fidelity from an adaptation. If you do, well, why not stick with the original source? What I want to know is that someone has done this for a reason. They've got something they want to say or something they're going to do with it that makes it interesting, that makes it part of whatever medium they're adapting it to, because it's not the same medium. You don't talk about a book adapting another book. You know, you talk about an adaptation from a play or from a film or from whatever it is. So I want to know why, and I want to know what's interesting about that adaptation in itself.
People have to be allowed a little bit of freedom. So Etna, you reckon that sometimes the films can actually be better than the original book?
Yeah, it depends. And I think sometimes you hear that a book is going to be adapted, and if you love it, you're invested one way or the other. And like, I remember when John Bamble's The Sea was adapted into a film, and I remember thinking, how is that going to work? I mean, that's because it's so internal, it's all thoughts and no real actions. I actually liked it, although critically the film wasn't that well received. But say something like Big Little Lies, when that was going to be adapted, I rubbed my hands. I love that book as well, but that is just brilliantly, it's brilliantly made, because it's
such a delicious television
film. Character driven. Also, it's full of wealthy, beautiful people, which is just an enjoyable thing to watch on screen, you know.
So we have a clip of it here, actually, but before we get to the clip, just explain. So there was a book by Leanne Moriarty, and they used up the whole book in the first miniseries.
Yeah, and then there was this massive demand, because the series was so popular. It was made by Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman, who were also in it. There was such a demand for a second season, but there was no more book. So Leanne Moriarty wrote a second book, shorter, about 50-something thousand words. But that book won't be published. There's no plans to publish it. It was only to give the script writers something to base a second season off. So that is the level of demand that there is for material to adapt.
And they also, the book was set in Australia originally,
but
I think half the joy in it is the milieu these people live in, which is...
Well, exactly. And so they moved it to the west coast of America. But it, in both books, they're very wealthy suburbs, and it's set around a school and quite a well-to-do neighbourhood. And so that didn't actually change. And so moving the location was fine. They just moved it from one glamorous place to probably a more glamorous place, which is LA.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's super glam. Here are the super glam moms, I think, coming back after the school holidays. And this is the school gay chat in Monterey.
Yes.
How was your summer?
It was wonderful. Very busy with the kids and camp. Just flew by.
Same.
How was yours, yeah?
Well, joined the board of PayPal. What was I thinking? Adding one more thing to my life. But, you know, oh, hold on. These are my Hamilton tickets.
Okay.
I've seen four times.
Hi,
yes.
Minnie. How are you?
I'll see you in there. Going? Here, come meet my best friend, Celeste.
Hey, Bill. How you been?
Mel, oh. When did you get to town?
Oh, late last night.
You didn't call me.
No, I'm sorry.
And how did you get more beautiful?
I'm very similar to
we've all had that school gay experience. Join the board of PayPal. Yeah. What was I thinking? So Harvey, this is a situation here. No, I haven't read the book, but where a lot of people say that the TV program really became a different thing and something that is a brilliant television show. It's not always about sticking religiously to your source material, is it?
No, it's not. And again, the situation with Big Little Lies is similar to The Handmaid's Tale, again, which has gone on beyond the original text, or a Game of Thrones. And the fact that, you know, George R.R. Martin gave them certain pointers for the plot meant the writers could then follow loosely where he thinks he wants to go with it, but it's not done.
And so Margaret Atwood has done similar,
and Margaret Atwood has done the same thing with The Handmaid's Tale. Yeah, yeah,
so
exactly.
The first season would have been her book used up completely,
yes,
would it?
Yes, as far as I know, yeah. And there was a movie back in the 90s, Volker Schlondorf directed a film version of The Handmaid's Tale as well. So, you know, this text has circulated before. But yeah, so they can go on and they can have their own life, and then that life can spin off into other things. We've got another Lord of the Rings television series coming along, which again is yet another spin off from something that's already been looked at cinematically very successfully. And so then it becomes a question of, again, why? And with a lot of these adaptations going to television, television is where the money is right now. And because you can endlessly extend something over, you know, not just one telling of the story, but over 8 or 9 seasons, well, you know, that's 8 or 9 seasons of advertising revenue.
There's another model as well that we see now, which is, I suppose you could roughly call it the Harry Potter model. Mm. And explain to us that, where the kind of cross-media book film.
Yeah, well, Harry Potter is a really interesting one from the point of view of adaptation. And indeed, when the novels came out, it was being credited with a rise in literacy again. The children were really interested in books. And then when the film started to come out, we were up to the Goblet of Fire in the novels, and suddenly you had almost a transmedial presence. It's hard to kind of put your finger on where the novels stop and where the films begin. And because J.K. Rowling was so inherently involved in the production of the films, again, the books and the films were working in tandem with one another, so they weren't spoiling one another. She was doing what
one
she was doing.
One big money-making exercise.
Absolutely, okay. And it has led to the franchise
Let's
cinema we have
a,
now.
A clip from Harry Potter.
Are you sure that's a real spell? Well, it's not very good, is it? Of course, I've only tried a few simple ones myself, but they've all worked for me. For example, Oculus Reparo. That's better, isn't it? Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Ron Weasley.
Pleasure. You two better change into robes. I expect we'll be arriving soon.
The transmedia monster that is Harry Potter there. Jean, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, I suppose the book that I remember once, you know, hearing it was being made into a film and having a moment of terror because, you know, you love the book and you think, what are they going to do to it as a film? And I was completely wrong in it and really thrilled to be wrong was Room by Emma Donoghue. I thought that succeeded as a book in a totally different way than it succeeded as a film.
So
Lenny Abrahamson,
great filmmaker.
And I remember reading or seeing an interview, kind of an in-person interview at a book festival with Emma Donoghue, and she spoke really well about how she had been so determined to not have it turned into a film. And then Lenny Abrahamson sat down and wrote, I think, a 3 or 4 page A4 full cap letter about what the book meant to him and how he would treat it in film form.
I think that's crucial to the person that's involved. Like, yeah. Lenny Abrams is great, and he's adapting Sally Rooney's novel Normal People at the moment.
Can't
that's
going
a 12-part TV series, which if you read the novel, that doesn't seem obvious from the novel, but I trust him and I presume it's going to be good.
Because it's a strong
Sally Rooney trusts him clearly as well.
Yeah, I think she's involved in writing the script, so that's good.
Dara?
Yeah, I guess it's a double-edged sword because with a book, the thing is you've got a ready-made audience if it's a beloved book, but then you've also got like fans like me of I love Nick Hornby books. Two when I was growing up, two incredibly important books to me were High Fidelity and About a Boy. Absolutely beautiful books. And when I heard that they were being made into movies, my kind of heart sank because I thought these
is going to destroy.
But About a Boy is great. But what I wanted to say was that absolutely both those movies, I recommend anybody who hasn't seen them, particularly About a Boy, where they actually changed the end to make it incredibly emotional.
And High Fidelity was taken to the States, wasn't it?
Yeah, John Cusack did that with Jack Black, and they were fantastic.
But isn't it because they stand in their own right?
Because
I think you're always disappointed if you love a book and you go wanting the book to be on screen.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's when you learn to love the screen adaptation for itself as an entity that's related but distinct.
Are there any adaptations that of beloved books of yours that just didn't work as films that shouldn't have been made?
Were there any that just didn't work? God, I don't know.
Dune is the one that comes to mind to me. David Lynch's Dune.
Yeah.
Completely insane film from a book I
can think of ones that I didn't think were very good, like A Girl on the Train. They moved that from England to New York, and I really thought that just kind of ruined the original book. But I wasn't so invested in A Girl on the Train that it,
Are you a fan of what Baz Luhrmann does with kind of sacred texts like Romeo and Juliet, The Great Gatsby?
I did not enjoy the film adaptation of The Great Gatsby. It got the glitz and glam of that world brilliantly, and again, that's an enjoyable thing to watch on screen, but it didn't get the desperate loneliness of Gatsby because it was all about the razzmatazz. And I think maybe Great Gatsby is never described as an unfilmable book.
For me, it's unfilmable.
Yeah.
It's such a book, and it's such a personal relationship I think people have with that book over all stages of your life.
Exactly.
And everything that I've never watched a film of it and I never will.
And not to be cynical, but like I think studios, movie producers, sometimes they don't really care too much if the audience loves the book because they're just looking for something that already has a track record of doing well that they can then adapt. And I often feel sorry for original screenwriters because there's so little original material. Everything is adapted, like podcasts get adapted, newspaper articles, toys, like the Lego movies.
Your books are getting adapted at the moment,
well,
I believe.
Yeah, my first book, Love No 27, was this. I sold the option to NBC Universal and they have renewed the option, which is great because they give me money every time they renew it. And the idea for that is that it's a romance procedural in the kind of Grey's Anatomy vein. But like it may never get made because I remember a couple of years ago someone telling me the odds of stuff that gets optioned actually getting made is 1 in 20 and now so much gets optioned that I'd say the longer odds, but I don't mind because every time they renew the option they give me some more money, so that's fine.
Yeah. It's not just books, it's also video games and the Pikachu movie that they ruined the game.
You're a grown man, for God's sake.
Barely, no, I'm kidding, but I was taken to see it by my 12 year old son
because the game was such an extraordinary piece of art.
Favourite example conversely of a book that I thought I would love because I love the movies and I was so devastatingly disappointed by was the Godfather book by Maria Puzo.
Oh, yeah.
Truly dreadful. The movies are fantastic. Most of them are fantastic.
Yeah. Some people say it's a great book.
I didn't know that.
Well, the book is very pulpy and the film transcends that and becomes something much more powerful.
Of course, there is a situation a lot of time where there are movies and people don't even realise that somebody bought a novel there. For example,
Die Hard. Die Hard is based on a 1979 novel called Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe, and it's a sequel to a 60s novel called The Detective, which was actually made into a film with Frank Sinatra in 1968, and it's the same character. And in Nothing Lasts Forever he's an older detective whose daughter, not wife, has gone off astray on him, and he finds himself in a building with actual terrorists. And this novel was published in 1979, and the character's name is Joe Leland. And they changed it, obviously, for the film into John McClane. They gave him a wife who had gone astray that he needed to rescue from, not terrorists, but thieves, and turned it into one of the most spectacular action blockbusters of the 1980s. But that was a novel, and people just don't realise that. A lot of action films are based on novels. Sylvester Stallone's film Cobra, based on a novel called A Running Duck. First Blood, also based on a very acclaimed 1970s novel about post-traumatic stress disorder. So, you know, there are a lot of things out there that are literary.
Before we finish up, briefly, Little Women is back in another adaptation?
Yeah, there are certain stories that it seems we just can't get enough of. A Christmas Carol, Jane Austen novels and Little Women. And I was trying to think of a favourite adaptation, and possibly the 1994 adaptation of Little Women, which has Susan Sarandon and Winona Ryder and Kirsten Dunst. But like that, that book has been adapted so many times. Catherine Hepburn did it in the 30s. There was a series with Maya Hawke filmed, and Emily Watson actually filmed in Ireland 2 years ago. Last year there was another adaptation, and now there's one coming out at the end of the year directed by Greta Gerwig and with Saoirse Ronan playing Jo Marsh, which I think is just like, it's such an iconic character. And the reason that we constantly have adaptations of that is because it's these cool, strong women living in a world where that is not the norm. And I think also because there are so many actresses that want to play Jo.
And each generation discovers it for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
It happened in my house in the last year.
Yeah, and I think the idea of young girls seeing this new film is just brilliant, you know.
Okay, thanks very much, Etna and Harvey. And